Coffee Time Wednesdays with the Prairie Farm Podcast.
Can't hit us with the jingle.
Yeah, I bet you Elon's gonna buy it. Like at 2 a.m. and nobody knows.
That'd be kind of cool.
TikTok?
Yeah.
Nah, way, dude.
I think Nicholas is gonna buy it. He's gonna sell his TikTok? Coffee shop.
Oh yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. Sell my coffee shop for $100,000, and then I'll get a loan for $8 billion and buy TikTok.
Is that what it's currently valued at?
Oh, I don't know. Well, the big thing is that they're not selling the algorithm with it, which is the reason that TikTok is considered better, quote unquote, than YouTube Shorts or Reels. And
so, who's getting the algorithm?
Well, they'll keep it. ByteDance. ByteDance is a Chinese company, so they can use it in other countries. They just can't use it in the United States.
Interesting.
So basically, they don't like the technology associated with that app.
AI technology. No, they say it's a threat to because most of the time the microphone is on through your TikTok app.
Did you hear about the Roombas and the Wi-Fi and all that?
No. Dude, we're rolling, but tell me about Roombas.
Your Roombas are currently mapping your home, and the servers to them are probably from China. Also, there's a certain vacuum out there right now that will not be named that does that too.
Interesting.
So
I don't care. I still want a Roomba. China can know all about my house.
I need DJ Roomba from Parks and Rec.
DJ Roomba. That's right. DJ Roomba, no.
Like drives off the steps or whatever.
Well, welcome back to Coffee Time Wednesday, the Prairie Farm Podcast. We're here, host.
I just had a funny thought. The Roomba in Nick's house just gets his house condemned.
Wait, somebody lives there?
Oh, no.
I thought that was a shack for animals.
Not suitable for humans.
China is so concerned about it, they call the U.S. government to be like,
you gotta get those people out of there.
They could die.
Oh my gosh.
No, it's fine. It's a good livable place. It's got stud walls, and we'll have drywall within the year.
House.
Yeah. See? So, anyway, we got David back with us.
Yeah.
Hello.
We've got
we're going to start a new segment with David.
Starting a new, brand new segment.
The Mechanic Minute.
Ooh.
Minute. I just found out about this, folks. We we just decided this. All right, David, your Mechanic Minute.
We need to break up the show a little bit. We'll do a Mechanic Minute after the first topic, and then we'll do a...
We're already 3 minutes in, which means we're going to have to skip over Ken's topic. That's such a
bummer.
Talking about everyone's favorite flower.
Tell us about it, Ken.
Dandelions. You want me to go first or you want to go first?
No, you go first. I went first last time.
So it is dandelion season because it's a season.
The ground is above 21 degrees and dandelions will be out.
Yeah, I think I actually did see some... Was it in December where we had a warm spell? I think actually we had 3 or 4 days in a row where the temps were in the 50s during the daytime, maybe even 60s. Mm-hmm. And then overnight it was above freezing. And so Carol was able to actually do some very unorthodox time of year spraying because the temperatures are right. And it's actually provided a great opportunity to hit some of those cool season weeds and grasses that were not yet dormant.
But to be fair, on the prairie farm, every year dad's like, yeah, it's a little different this year. We'll be doing this instead of what we normally do. I'm waiting for that what we normally do year.
Yeah, that would be cool. We're always adjusting. But it was handy. We've actually been able to see some of the benefits of being able to do that. But I remember during that spell, not many, but I saw a few dandelions that were, blooming really. And so today, it's the last day of April. It's been a fairly warm spring. I've been seeing tons of dandelions everywhere. So this time of year, dandelions are thriving, right? And so it just got me thinking. It's I've always wanted to learn more about dandelions, and this will not be all inclusive, of course, but I wanted to figure out, okay, how did we end up with them? Where'd they come from originally? was there something people liked about them? Like, why do we have them? And so I did a little digging, and I found a Maine organic farmer website. And I also found this website, which is Cornell College of Agriculture and Life Sciences.
Okay. Andy went to Cornell.
That's right. Dude, I was just thinking of that. That's
exactly where my head went.
Oh, go big, man. So I think Nick was on that quartet group with him. But anyways.
I can see that.
If anybody doesn't know, that's an Office reference.
Yes, we're old. Anyway, so this is from the Cornell website. Cornell Cals is what it's called. it is believed that dandelions started out in Europe. I think we generally regard them as a Eurasian species just because it probably wasn't like a hard line where it stopped. And then it also said in this article that it says, but spread through Eurasia and North America prior to human agriculture, which I thought was interesting. Whoa. Because later on, and at that Maine organic website, is believed that some of the first European settlers to come to America, they mentioned on the Mayflower, some of the, what we call the pilgrims, right, brought dandelion seeds with them intentionally. I figured it was like an unintentional thing, because think about how dandelion seeds are so tiny. The wind blows them everywhere. They stick to your clothes. They could very easily be accidentally transferred, right? But that gets into another part of dandelions. Dandelions have some like homeopathic medicinal value.
And you can eat them.
Right. And yep, they're edible. A lot of people make dandelion wine, dandelion tea. My wife made some dandelion jelly last year.
It's not for eating. Kent actually rubs it between his toes to keep the toe jam out. It's a disinfectant.
Very homeopathic. Oh, man. No. But there's those different values. So it's believed that some of the earliest European settlers brought them here. And then from an agricultural standpoint, not just what are they useful for, how did they get here, but there's a reason we have so many of them.
Why?
So,
tell me.
First of all, they're tiny. Anytime you're tiny, no matter what organism you are, you're going to have an easier time becoming very numerous, right?
Well, that is their, that's like their defense.
They're an R strategist, right? You make a bajillion tiny seeds. Yeah, a lot of them are going to get, they're going to land in an area where they can't grow, or they're going to get eaten or whatever, right? Destroyed. But because there's a bajillion of them, some of them are going to take off, right? And so, but that's the first thing. But also, they can survive up to 5 years in soil, you know.
And, oh, the seed can dormant.
Right. It can be viable for that. And also, it doesn't have a very long dormancy either, if any. It can take off pretty much right away. And so, you have something that lasts for a while, very tiny. It's windborne, waterborne, right? Even animal hide could carry these seeds. Whereas a lot of things like legumes, think of that, like those aren't going anywhere unless they're like shattered off the plant and then they land 5 feet away from where they started, or an animal eats it and maybe it survives the digestion of the animal and it gets pooped out elsewhere. But these things, they can be distributed in a lot of different ways, super tiny, a whole bunch of them. But also, they emerge throughout the growing season. Like new dandelions blossom, pop out basically.
Yeah, they have like 8 cycles a year.
Yeah, whoa. Basically from like March here at our latitude, basically from March through definitely October.
Dang.
But even into November, and like I said, in the rare case, the anomaly of December. So super long growing season. They're very cold tolerant, obviously, if they're growing in those cold seasons. But it also mentioned that they can survive drought. Older plants can survive drought. If you ever dug up a dandelion, you can see how deep those tap roots go. They're drought tolerant, and they can even handle disturbance really well. So, like, if a plant gets damaged, it will like heal itself and start sprouting up a new plant. So
do.
They're a Franken plant, you know, or not a Franken plant, but they're meant to survive the apocalypse.
Hmm. Yeah. That's crazy. You know what blows my mind about dandelions is we'll have our lawn mowed, and the next day a dandelion, yeah. All the dandelions will be 6 inches taller than the grass.
Yep.
Yeah. It's like, what the heck?
Yeah.
It's what do you call those? Hydra or something where you cut off its head yeah. and two more grow up. Oh
my yeah, gosh. It is like yeah. that.
That's
yeah.
exactly what a dandelion is.
Yep.
But it, I mean, their stems are made of nothing. They're hollow. They're thin. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and if you squeeze them, that's like all water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So if it rains, it can build a stem in like 12 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, pretty interesting stuff though on dandelions. Definitely not all like encompassing information there.
Kyle Larbarger said that, yes, dandelions are good for bees, but mostly just honeybees. Which are native to Eurasia, not
right.
the North America. They're actually not that useful for native bees.
Pollinators, yeah.
Yep. So we what I'm saying is we can't say, oh, I've got dandelions. That's enough.
Yeah.
You know, it's not enough. Not saying that dandelions is bad. I actually don't mind the look of dandelions at all.
Yeah.
I should probably do something about how many I have in my yard. We just have so many.
Well, yeah, it's an example. I mean, a very visible example of... In a yard, you have two competing monocultures, right? You have Kentucky bluegrass or whatever yard mix you have, and then you have dandelions.
Yeah.
You know, two invasive species that would have, if the prairie hadn't been removed there, would have to compete with big blue stem, would have to compete with all the different native forbs. Like, I bet partridge pea probably holds its own with dandelions fairly well because partridge pea is pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
You know,
it'll mess around.
Right. It sticks around. And in fact, that was the other, I was thinking, we talked about another flower that will survive the apocalypse. That was it. It was partridge pea. Is when we were talking with Casey Bauman from
Black Eyed Susan and partridge pea.
And WTF. Yep. So, well, yeah. And dandelions.
Yeah.
All right. Mechanic minute.
Let's go. Okay. So today.
This is David again, by the way.
Hi. Now, today I'm working on this cool truck we have here. It's like an old ambulance truck.
Yeah.
And yeah, Dad literally bought an ambulance off an auction and took off the box.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And put a flatbed on it. And it's a great truck. It's a turbo 7.3, which is awesome. So today I'm working on getting the onboard air on board again.
Yeah. For the air shocks, right?
Mm-hmm. And then in the middle of that, I'm also in the process of removing the main battery ignition cable on it. So the red one, and it's a beast. It's got, there's like 20 zip ties I've removed at this point, a few clips, and there's a few tie-in points, and there's like five different anchor points to it that I'm working on, and it's cool. I think once we replace it, it's going to be really nice, and the truck's going to start a lot better and more efficiently.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to those airbags having their own compressor, man.
Yeah.
One of the funniest things, I won't say what Nick said. It's a family podcast. But
me?
We were driving through the field once where those air shocks had zero air in them. They were totally flat. And Nick and I were bouncing in that cab.
Where were
so
we?
Hard. We were just coming out of the field. I think we were backpack spraying, and we're like trying to talk, and we couldn't even talk because we're like. And Nick made a funny comment, which I will not say, but it had to do with fat deposits on his body jiggling.
Look, man, a good friend of mine recently said, if you lay on your side and you feel your stomach gather in front of you and lay next to you, it's time to go on the carnivore diet. Ken, don't get such a kick out of this. You're embarrassing me.
How's that carnivore diet going, by the way?
Well, I stopped last week, but I'm getting ready to pick it back up.
He's now a herbivore.
I'm getting ready to pick it back
up. He's on the carnivore diet.
When we opened the coffee shop, Danielle and I were literally working like 5 to 8:30.
Yeah.
And I was like, when are we supposed to cook? And
right.
Granted, we were making so much money because we were the employees making what we will normally pay employees. We were making so much money that... We're like, well, we'll just eat out. And then I'd get there and I could have like beef sticks. You know, it's like, that's nothing I can
beef sticks.
It's a nice restaurant. He just happens to go up to like where the vending machines are outside the building.
Oh, thank goodness. They got beef jerky. Stick. Oh, crap. It's teriyaki flavor. No! Can't have teriyaki.
Cutting Slim Jims with a butter knife.
Dude, I've got a cool topic about Chick-fil-A, right, but that's not what we're talking about today. We're talking about, and actually the Chick-fil-A thing has to do with Tom Philpott as well.
Oh, nice.
Our past guest. But here is what we've got going on, or not going on, chocolate. If anybody pays attention to the stock market at all, it's the story of the quarter.
It's a great time for all you SpongeBob fans to...
What are they selling? Chocolate! That's a great episode. I had an iPod for a while. And, you know, every once in a while, back, you didn't have a job. So you only got new music or anything if you got, like, a gift card from a parent or an aunt or something.
I remember those days.
Yeah. And I, like, literally had, like, 8 songs on my iPod and 1 episode of SpongeBob. And it was the chocolate episode. So I watched that single episode over and over and over. 13-year-old Nicholas. Anyway, so chocolate prices are skyrocketing. I'm currently on foodandwine.com, but I was on NPR, and NPR did an interview, and I was basically reading the interview. Mm. Here's why. Like, 2/3 of all cacao, or cocoa, or whatever you want to call it, is grown in Western Africa, who are dealing with really, really abnormal climate issues. Mm. Very strong winds and... like super strong winds. We deal with it here on the farm. If we get a strong wind when we should be harvesting, psh, kiss that harvest goodbye. Mm-hmm. So they're dealing with strong winds when they shouldn't, really heavy rain. And then I didn't go into details on this one, but there's actually a fungus that, because of the heavy rains, is collecting and killing these cacao plants. Hmm. And it's becoming quite an issue where to the point where Hershey and Mars, some of the other really big chocolate companies, kind of caught wind of it. So they started buying it up. So that's driving up the price. But then also stock traders, like day traders who are trying to make a buck, they are riding on the price. So it's become kind of a little bit of a bubble, but actually fairly founded in the fact that the supply is way, way down. Mm. And last quarter, because of this, Hershey's, I believe it was, reported 11.5% drop in profit. And I don't know if that's because they get their hands on less chocolate, or if it's because their cost of goods, like, they're buying chocolate right now for 6 months from now.
Right.
So if they're just the chocolate they had to buy that quarter was so much more expensive than they had planned. But Hershey's is not going to eat that cost.
Yeah.
No. Literally, who's going to eat that cost? Ken Boucher.
That's right.
That's right.
He's going to literally eat the cost. And Snickers, the price is going to go up on bars. Some bars are going to get smaller. Or if they have maybe just a chocolate coating, the coating will get thinner. You know, they're going to be creative.
I wonder what will happen with, like, seasonally branded candy. You know what I
mean? Halloween's
like,
going to be pretty rough this year.
Well, yeah. And, like, you know, Valentine's, Easter. You know how they always, like, roll out? Oh, these are the Easter Reese's.
Well, so that was a thing. A lot of Easter packs this year had, like, way less chocolate and more of the marshmallowy or jello-y candies in them. Like, a lot more. Like, they took out half the chocolate.
So they're skimping out on us, man.
Well, and I wonder if they'll stop. You know what I mean? Because this was a teacher hack when you wanted to buy candy for your class.
Yeah.
You know, like, maybe you were trying to bribe the kids to learn or something.
You bought Easter stuff after Easter.
Future life opportunity wasn't enough of a bribe. I want it up front. you would go, like, the day after Halloween, and all the candy's, like, half
discount.
Off.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Yep. And I wonder if that kind of thing, if we'll start to see that going away. You know what I mean? Like,
it just stays high-priced.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's interesting?
And they don't brand like that.
In the 40s. During World War II, I think it was World War II, not World War I, chocolate skyrocketed. Snickers went from a nickel to like 75 cents. Well, then the war went over. Chocolate came down in price. And you know what didn't come down in price? Snickers. People still paid the price for it. So Snickers said, cool. Yeah. And they kept it the same price, but now that they could sell more. And I wonder if it won't be something like that. Because there's an actual economic term for it when a price goes up because of inflation or something, and then it could come down, but it tends to be, quote unquote, stickier on the way down.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing the same thing with Roundup this year. Roundup finally went down in price because corn went down in price. Although I do find it coincidental that Roundup during after COVID or whatever was like crazy expensive for COVID and supply reasons, which very well could have been. Yeah, but corn was $7.50. So very coincidentally, corn was very high priced and so was Roundup. And now corn's at $4.10 and Roundup's like, well, our cost has gone down, so we can charge like half as much and you know, still make a profit. Like, I'm not accusing anybody of anything. I'm just raising my eyebrow.
He's just noticing some correlation there.
I'm just seeing some things, you know? I'm just seeing some things. But speaking of seeing some things, I've been sleeping. Not enough.
Oh, okay.
And when you don't sleep enough, you need coffee.
Oh, yes.
Mm.
And thankfully, we are sponsored by one of the greatest coffee companies of all time. Why are they one of the greatest? Well, they have great coffee, but lots of places have great coffee, so we don't want to take away from other places. Here's what Wild River's Coffee Company does. They give at least 2%, almost always more, of every bag purchase, or resources, I'll say, to conservation efforts. Mm-hmm. And they are 2% certified. They have great coffee. They really vet the companies that are the nonprofits the or conservation organizations. Yeah. Yep. They really vet those. And they just got cool branding.
Yeah. I've now tried all five. Is the right term roasts or blends?
It depends on what it is.
Oh.
So a blend means they got coffee from different places and put it together. A roast is like it actually went in the roaster and came out. So I think that there's a lot of overlap going on there.
Okay. Well, anyways, they're five.
It's probably
maybe
a blend.
I should say flavors. One of the five flavors or five options. We'll just go.
Yeah.
That's
yeah. Okay, well,
I've tried all five.
It's almost guaranteed a blend because you can't be consistent and be single origin because single origin means it came from the exact lot or field. Like all the beans and this cup of coffee came from the same field out in, you know, Africa.
Yeah, that's very specific.
Yep. And that's why coffee places will actually get quote unquote single origin for like 2 weeks. And then they have to get a different single origin.
Mm.
So I don't think they don't do that because if you're able to keep it consistent, you're usually buying from a region, kind of blending it all together and getting a feel for it.
Well, the five options available at wildriverscoffeeco.com, I believe, is the website. I've tried all five options. I just now got the signature blend, roast, whatever it's called.
Their house.
It's got the salmon. Yeah. It's got the salmon on the bag.
Oh, cool.
I believe the
is that BHA?
No, I believe it's Trout Unlimited.
Trout Unlimited,
which is an awesome organization that helped save. I think it's called Pebble. What was it Pebble Beach Mine or Pebble Creek Mine? One of the two. Save that from being mined. Say it's one of the most important, if not the most important, I think you refer to it as a salmon hatchery, you know, like a natural breeding area for salmon in the Western Hemisphere.
Wow.
And it was going to be, there was going to be a huge open pit mine that was going to open up right there and nearly got the permits passed for that. Trout Unlimited worked really hard to block that and preserve that resource. And thankfully, they were able to do that. So great organization. I think it's Pebble Beach Mine is what the mine was going to be that was going to go in there. But anyways, great tasting roast. I think it's my second favorite. So right now, this is my ranking. The one with the bison on the bag could be because it's prairie related. I don't know. So the dark roast. Then I'd probably go signature and my sister-in-law, who offered drink ideas to Nicholas for his coffee shop. So she's kind of
a
coffee person.
Matcha? She was the one that told us matcha?
Yep.
Yeah, we do matcha really well. Anyway.
So she was visiting with my brother this last weekend and their daughter. And I was like, hey, Gigi, you should try this coffee. This is the company that sponsors Coffee Time Wednesday. And she thought it was great. Nice. And so I'd go dark, signature, Columbia.
What's then, the lightest roast they have?
I think that's either Ethiopian is pretty light, right? Or
it can be.
Or Colombian.
It's not light roast isn't about where it's from. It's about literally how long do they roast it.
Oh, yeah. I think they were the lighter because that's more like a blonde coffee, right?
Yeah.
I think it was Ethiopian and Guatemalan were the.
It's a lot harder to get light roast to be consistent. But those were, you like the dark roast more?
Yeah. I think it's just because I'm a dark roast kind of guy. I like it from other coffee companies. I usually like the dark roast the best too. But anyways, love Wild Rivers Coffee Company. You'll love it too. Go check it out. You find the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening to Coffee Time Wednesday, sponsored by Wild Rivers Coffee Company.